should be necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with the gun writer, Lee Williams, here in just a minute. Both about the latest with Patrick Tate Damiak and Lee's latest column, taking a look at a couple of anti-gun studies, quote unquote, that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association. You know, every day too, we also do the recidivist report. We do an armed citizen story. We do a good deed of the day. We've got that coming up for you later today. I will tell you the recidivist report, a little bit different than normal because this is a first-time offender, but we're going to be talking about the trial of anti-gun state senator Nicole Mitchell in Minnesota, who is facing felony burglary charges for breaking into her stepmother's home and, well, as she told police, knowing she did something bad. Anyway, we'll talk about that after our interview with Lee Williams. Take a look at a listen. Lee, it's good to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Cam.
You bet. You know, I was thinking about this when I was reading your latest piece. One of the things that I really enjoy about covering the Second Amendment as a beat, I mean, obviously, I'm personally invested in my right to keep and bear arms, but it's just an interesting beat for a reporter because you never know exactly what you're going to be covering, right? There are days when it's going to be you have to put your lawyer hat on and you're going to have to read all kinds of legal briefs. There are days when you're going to have to be a fact checker and you're going to have to, you know, expose media bias. There are days where you have to kind of cosplay as a scientist or a doctor and read a bunch of medical journals, right? You never really know what you're going to be dealing with. And so you do have to wear a lot of hats. And you are certainly a great example of somebody who can successfully do that, right? I mean, whether it's...
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. I mean, listen, you know, your coverage of Tate Damiak's case has been, I think, just outstanding. I mean, second to none. And I think it shows your grasp of, you know, pretty intricate legal issues, covering courtroom trials, covering appeals. But your latest piece touches on a couple of journals in a couple of articles in medical journals, which you describe as hard fiction as opposed to hard science.
Yeah. Well, the thing is about I appreciate that. The thing about Tate is you have no idea how deep this thing goes. I mean. My God, you know, we wrote recently about we were covering all of his charges. Well, there's a laundry list of charges. And, you know, we went off on the M240 machine gun plates that he had. I fired an M240. I love the M240, but these were 80% side plates, man. And they charged him with 4 machine guns for having these. I just can't believe it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the every time I read an update to Tate's case as a gun writer, I get more and more furious at the justice system, at the DOJ for, you know, continuing this sham a trial, at the judge who, you know, just blindly accepted the ATF's bizarre assertions. Frankly, you know, I will say I'm disappointed that the DOJ has not adopted a different stance under the Trump administration when it comes to this prosecution. I'm disappointed that we haven't seen anything from the ATF
The good news is I'm hearing from a lot of readers, a lot of people who are a lot of followers who are talking to their local representatives, their political representatives, and are getting word back that, hey, this has already been accepted by the ATF or by Congress or by whoever, and they're looking at doing something. Hopefully, President Trump, I mean, he's the ultimate. You know, you talk to Cam, you talk to his attorney. They'd like their day in court. They would like complete vindication, saying Cam did nothing wrong. We're going to cut him loose today. Here's $1 million, whatever. But quite frankly, you know, if he takes a pardon, there's a lot of stuff involved in a pardon where he might have to admit guilt. Well, he did nothing wrong, but at least he would be out. I mean, if he waits for the legal, waits for the appeal isn't in for a couple months. He's looking at least another year behind bars.
Right. And that's the thing, right? I mean, if he were out, it might even be a different calculation if he were out on bond, pending the conclusion of his appeal, right?
Well, nobody believes the charges. And we've gone through every single charge, Cam. And if you look at some of the people that Trump has already pardoned, they were guilty. They've admitted their guilt and they're out. Cam did nothing wrong. I mean, trust me, I've lost a lot of sleep going through every one of these charges. The one on the M240s is one of the last ones. He had a couple of side plates, 80%. You want one of those, you can order them online. They'll mail it right to your house. No FFL, nothing. And yet they turned those into machine guns.
Yeah.
Four machine guns for four side plates, left and right side plates. If I told you this 5 years ago, no one would believe it.
Right. I was going to say, under the Biden administration, I mean, the weaponization we saw the ATF, that makes it somewhat believable. And I am glad to hear that what your readers are hearing back is that, this is on the radar, that something is in the works. But, this is why you have people talking about there's no way to reform the ATF. Right. It has to go, right, because of abuses like this. I've talked with folks like Cody Wisniewski, even Alan Gottlieb, about the fact that, even if the ATF were to get shuttered today, the underlying regulations and laws are still in place. And it could be, whatever new agency, it could be the FBI, it could be maybe the DEA. They're still going to be able to conduct these abuses because of the statutory framework that's in effect. Right. So we've got a couple of things that needs to happen, including these structural reforms to our nation's gun laws, so that things like this can't happen in the future.
I completely agree, but the one caveat for all of this is getting rid of the ATF. Has to go right now.
Yeah.
We'll figure out the law later. We'll figure out who's going to enforce it later. Right now, ATF has to go. There is no way this organization, and just looking at this case alone is my justification, although I've written about ATF for 15 years, and they're nothing but a pot of abuse. They literally are causing abuse, legal, moral, religious, you name it. What they did to this man, I mean, he literally did nothing wrong. They paid $9,000 to a confidential informant who was full of crap, kicked down Tate's door, go in there, they find nothing illegal. So then they bring in this creative firearms enforcement officer, and he turned a toy Stenza machine gun into into a machine gun. I mean, that we went through every single I relisted them in this story. Mm-hmm. And you can see how they stretched the truth, how they broke the law. I was a policeman for 10 years. I testified, I don't know, thousands of times. When you're on that stand, man, you're under oath.
Yeah.
And this guy broke his oath and he needs to go. ATF, the fact that they haven't hung him by his heels yet shows that they can't be trusted. They need to go. You cannot allow an illegitimate law enforcement organization like this out there, or we're going to have more Tate Adamiacs. And I got to tell you, Tate is the worst.
Absolutely.
Worst case, the ATF is their worst thing they've ever done.
And that's saying a lot.
A lot.
I mean, because, you could talk about their role in Operation Fast and Furious, the storefront sting operations in Milwaukee and a couple of other places where they, essentially allowed felons to arm themselves and walk out the door. Right. I mean, they've done a lot of shady stuff. But as you say, this is I can't think of a case that's more abusive. But I do appreciate your coverage, and we are going to continue to highlight it at Bearing Arms. But I did want to ask you about your latest piece about these anti-gun articles in medical journals, right? Doctors increasing their fight against the Second Amendment. You say that the JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, when Biden was in office, would publish an anti-gun article every couple of months. You say, though, that has like really ramped up since President Trump has taken office.
We had two on Friday. And if you look at him, the first one was done by an anti-gun doctor who works for an anti-gun organization. And, you know, these type of physicians' journals, JAMA, I remember reading it years ago. You know, for a physician to get an article in JAMA was a big deal. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a career move. And it had to be well-researched. Usually there's a team of physicians or clinicians working on it. But right now, I got to tell you, man, it's like they'll take whatever is passed there. And
as long as maybe the subject matter fits their agenda, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's far left. Guns are bad. In this story, we took through, you know, we of course listed other JAMA stories that have relied upon the Gun Violence Archive, which is 20 dudes, you know, who make up numbers to fit whatever kind of anti-gun project they're working on. There's no legitimacy. The whole thing's a joke. I got to tell you, JAMA has really taken a step down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suspect you're right. And it's probably going to get even worse as we see, you know, legal wins for gun owners and legislative wins as well. I think they're getting a little panicky. You know, this first article that you wrote about state gun laws and firearm related homicides and suicides 2017 to 2022. I mean, as you say, this uses Gifford's annual gun law scorecard, right, as the basis right. of his argument. And again, the argument essentially is states with more gun control laws have lower gun related homicide and suicide rates. You know, I'm always fascinated by like what doesn't get asked, you know. So, for instance, you know, what is the non-gun suicide rate in these right. states? Right. right. Has the law in these states changed? Because, and what happened when that changed, right? I mean, California has some of the most restrictive gun laws in the nation, but since 2023, it's become, possible to get a concealed carry license in places it wasn't possible to do so before. Violent crime hasn't increased. Violent crime has dropped. We've seen this in Florida when constitutional carry took effect, right? Violent crime, homicides dropped. I think in 2023 or 2024, Miami had the fewest homicides since like 1947 or something like that.
Well, I think the most important thing is the quote we found in there from the author, from this guy whose name was Chetan Sathya, MD. Now, he's the director of the gun violence prevention at Northwell Health. Well, you know who pays for that? Anti-gun money.
Yeah.
So he went in there and he said in a separate interview, at its core, remember, gun violence injuries are extremely expensive to treat. And then he went off. So it's all about the money. I mean, this is an anti-gun guy working for an anti-gun organization who's getting published in a major physician, major organization for physicians. And that should piss everybody off.
Yeah.
Second story. Not as bad, but of course we went through the entire history of fake news that we found until, you know, I got to speak to one of my friends and I think one of the best pro-gun guys in the country, Dr. Robert B. Young. Mm-hmm. He runs Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. He read both of the studies and he just said, you know, it's just a so what, you know. He said it's, and I'm quoting him here, just one more citation to the author's bibliography while building a mass of data for activism. And he's absolutely right. That's all these people are doing.
Well, yeah. I mean, the second study, right, the recommendation, suggests a need for more effective strategies regarding how clinicians discuss Whatever. Firearms and firearm safety with patients and their families. So, and again, what's that discussion, right? Sometimes it is, do you store your firearms locked up, unloaded, ammunition stored separately so that, again, you can't use your firearm for self-defense? Sometimes that conversation is, do you need to own a gun? You're better off not owning a gun, right? I mean, I don't know about you, Lee. I've had conversations with my doctor about gun ownership, but it's been talking about hunting. It's been talking about our last time at the range. That's not what the author of this study is calling for, right? She is calling for a lecture
right.
to gun owners and a lecture to non-gun owners, warning them against owning a gun, right? But again, it starts with that assumption that gun ownership is a problem that must be solved.
Right. And it's up to the physicians to solve this problem, they would have you believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know my doctor, we talk guns all the time. He carries might have gone out and purchased a staccato after he saw mine. But, you know, they're rare. Those type of docs are rare. A few and they, more of them here in Florida.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, while my former doctor, he and I taught guns quite a bit, but he retired. My new doctor's great. We haven't had any conversation. I don't know if he's a gun owner, and I'm not going to be the one to bring it up. But my dentist and I talk firearms, or at least he talks, and I go, while I've got his hands in my mouth. My veterinarian loves long range shooting. Actually, he told me about a guy who lives in my county who's got a great setup that I didn't even know about. So, it is nice when you find those professionals and you can have genuine conversations. But again, that's not what the anti-gunners are looking for. They want the finger wag. They want the, why are you doing this? And for God's sakes, if you're not going to give up your guns, at least store them in a way that they're useless for you to use if somebody breaks into your home and wants to hurt you.
And they want their story in magazines like this so they can get money.
Yeah.
That's
right. That's right. Well, Lee, listen, man, keep up the great work. You might not be appearing in the pages of the Journal of the American Medical Association, but I got to tell you, that's probably a good thing these days. And folks can find you at thegunwriter.substack, right?
.com or saf.org.
That's right. Yeah. Second Amendment Foundation posts every one of your stories as part of their Second Amendment Investigative Journalism Project. And Lee, again, you just do outstanding work, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me on the program today.
Thank you, Cam. You take care, brother.
My thanks to Lee for joining me on the program and looking forward to having him back again here before long. All right. Let's turn our attention to, as I said, the trial of State Senator Nicole Mitchell. Felony burglary charges. And Monday was day one of the trial, I believe. Headline from the latest coverage here. Attorneys focus on intent during Senator Nicole Mitchell's burglary trial as police body cam released. So I am fascinated, and I wrote about this at Barron Arms. I'm shocked that Mitchell did not resolve this via a plea deal. I don't know if one was ever offered to her. I can only assume that one was not, because based on the circumstances of this case, man, I just don't see a jury of her peers acquitting her. And I'm just going to quote from Inforum, which is the one of the local papers covering this trial there in Becker County. Prosecutor Becker County Attorney Brian McDonald opened his argument with a statement attributed to Mitchell as she was arrested in her stepmother's house. "I know I did something bad. I ask you to specifically remember those words throughout this trial," McDonald said. During her arrest, Mitchell made clear confessions, McDonald said. He claimed evidence in the trial would show the residence that Mitchell entered was not her home, that she was not invited, and that she pried a window open with a crowbar. The defendant entered her stepmother's home with a purpose, to steal, McDonald said. The defense would show evidence of family conflict and terse exchanges between Nicole Mitchell and her stepmother, Carol Mitchell, following the death of Nicole Mitchell's father. But as the prosecutor said, grief and frustration do not justify burglary. Her attorney, Bruce Ringstrom Jr., described her as a concerned stepdaughter who entered the home to check on her stepmother who has Alzheimer's. "Our defense is there's no clear roadmap for helping an aging parent. There can be good days and bad days." As police were called to the house the morning of arrest, Ringstrom said Nicole Mitchell didn't run away, saying that her intent is to check on Carol Mitchell. "A burglar runs, a concerned child stays." And he said that her intent when she entered her stepmother's home is the real issue, noting that the defense does not dispute that she entered the house without consent. Ringstrom said there are two possible reasons for Nicole Mitchell to enter the home, to steal or to check on Carol Mitchell. Unless the state's evidence can rule out that she was there to check on her stepmother, the verdict must be not guilty. So here's the thing. The prosecution played body cam footage that was taken by one of two officers who responded to this report of a burglary, Detroit Lakes, Minnesota investigator Joseph Sternhagen. And in that body cam footage, as Nicole Mitchell is discovered in the basement of the home, by the way, dressed all in black with a black stocking cap, had a flashlight with a pair of, I think, the stocking over it to kind of dim the light, Sternhagen orders Nicole Mitchell to the ground. Carol Mitchell's down in the basement, but she's a ways away. She's kind of been like following the officers. And Nicole Mitchell calls out to Carol. And this is what she says. "Carol, it's Nicole. I was just trying to get a couple of my dad's things because you wouldn't talk to me anymore. Remember, her defense attorney says that Nicole Mitchell's intent is to check on Carol Mitchell. A burglar runs, a concerned child stays. She didn't say, careless Nicole, I was just concerned about you and I wanted to check on you. No, she said, I tried to get some of my dad's things. Now, again, I hate to be this way, but legally it's the case. The items in that home, unless they had been specifically willed to Nicole Mitchell, were not Nicole Mitchell's stuff. I sadly know what happens when a spouse dies and there are children, adult children. The surviving spouse typically takes control of that property that is not specifically willed to the surviving children. Now, if the items that were found in Nicole Mitchell's backpack had been specifically willed her, she still doesn't have a case about burglary. That still doesn't give you the right to break into somebody's home to get the stuff that you believe is yours, or maybe even that a will says is yours. You have to use the law to go about getting your stuff. Breaking the law to get your stuff is not going to work out well. And again, I don't think it has ever been proven that the items that were found in Senator Mitchell's backpack actually were willed to her or belonged to her in the first place. There were two laptop computers. No evidence that that actually belongs to her. Now, Carol Mitchell does suffer from Alzheimer's. And as Inform says, when she took the stand, she at times could not remember details, like specific dates. She couldn't remember the names of Nicole Mitchell's sons or the details of the days after her husband's death. Her account on the stand differed from her earlier testimony and the body cam footage. She said that she thought the person who broke into her home was a teenage boy, and later found out through a call with police that the person was Nicole Mitchell, rather than discovering that it was Nicole Mitchell there on the scene. She also said that a blue pry bar found in a window at her home later that morning was not the same one that she found. She said she remembered a larger lavender-colored pry bar, but she said she did not believe that her stepdaughter had concern for her well-being, health, and safety, saying that Nicole never let me get close to her. If this was simply a case of he said, or I guess she said, she said, Nicole Mitchell might have a decent chance of being found not guilty. I think Nicole Mitchell's own statements that discount her defense argument is going to make it very difficult, very difficult for a jury to conclude that prosecutors have not proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Nicole Mitchell entered that home unlawfully, not with the intent to check on her stepmother, because that would have been when she first saw Carol, that would have been the perfect time to say, Carol, I was so worried about you. That's not what happened. She said, I was there to get some things. Anyway, we'll keep our eyes open for any more details on this case. I'm fascinated by this. And by the way, you know, Nicole Mitchell, there was an attempt by Republicans to start an ethics investigation. Democrats said, no, we're going to wait till the trial's over, because had they done so, she would not have been able to vote. And she was the one vote majority for Democrats in the Minnesota State Senate. So this is what they chose to defend, essentially, because it was more important to have her available for a vote than to take a stand in opposition to her actions there last April. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Las Vegas. Headline, self-defense claimed in East Las Vegas shooting amid drop in Las Vegas murder rates. Yes, self-defense has been claimed in this case. It has also been accepted in this case. News 3 in Las Vegas says the incident started as a domestic disturbance between a man and a woman, as stated by police. At some point, another man in the unit became involved. Officers arrived to find two men suffering from gunshot wounds. Both men taken to a hospital where one was pronounced dead. The other man's condition was not provided. Sources tell News 3 that the man who was killed was initially in the fight with a woman. The other man stepped in to help. and was shot, according to sources. The man who was shot was able to wrestle the gun away and then shoot the other man who died. Again, that is considered a valid act of self-defense. After you've been shot, you have the ability, you have the right, I should say, to defend yourself. In fact, you don't even have to wait until you've been shot, as long as you have a reasonable belief of fear or a reasonable belief of a great bodily injury or death. In most states, that is justification for you to use a lethal force. Anyway, the case is still being submitted to the district attorney's office for self-defense review, but it sounds like that is just going to be a formality at this point. All right, and finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, an anonymous stranger in Texas who helped an Ingram man and his pregnant girlfriend during the recent flooding. Still don't know who this good Samaritan is. William Janke and his girlfriend Alexis Vargas were living in a mobile home about 100 yards from the Guadalupe River. They were there with their roommate when the floodwaters started to rise. And they had to evacuate the home. I mean, you know, it was just pouring into the mobile home, which eventually came off its foundation and floated, I believe, about 400 yards downriver. Janke's truck was found about 7 miles away. Janke had one life preserver in his house, and he and his roommate gave it to his pregnant girlfriend. They then went out into the floodwaters. He said, "I could see her just enough to where I told her, 'I love you, just grab a tree.'" They became separated for a little bit, but KENS TV says that they were actually reunited. They were able to grab onto a tree. Janke says that's when he lost sight of his roommate, Jackie, who was holding onto her dog, Jack. Jackie is okay. I'll tell you that they have not found Jack, the dog, unfortunately. But Janke and Vargas held onto the tree for about an hour and a half. They then lost their grip, managed to float downstream a little bit longer and grab onto another tree. Janke said, "I told her if we let go of this one, we're most certainly going to die." They were in the water for another half hour, he estimates, before the sun came up. Janke says the water level started to go down, and then a man appeared on the banks of the river. He had a green extension cord. Janke said he tied it to a tree, and then he tied it to himself, and he waded out there. And he told me to grab onto that extension cord, and he told her to grab onto my back. And again, took them to safety. Janke says he and his girlfriend only had minor cuts from boards and nails. His roommate is okay. But he says he would like to thank the unknown man who saved him and his girlfriend. He said, "My heart and prayers and everything goes out to everybody who lost somebody in the flood, because it was terrifying. It was fast and it caught us all off guard." And again, I mean, I said a couple days ago, there are going to be so many stories of heroism coming out of this tragic incident. And we'll probably learn more in the days to come. But I hope that William Janke and his girlfriend do get a chance to meet formally the man who saved their lives. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership. Join up at BearingArms.com. You got all kinds of great perks and benefits no matter what level of support you choose. And no matter what level you choose, we are very grateful for your support, because it means a lot. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.